Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo Donalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie. Say hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, so,
I feel like we've entered Bizarro World, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's just, we had a lot of just weird and awful shit happen all at once. Like, sometimes within, like, hours of each other.
Yeah.
That, you know, it just really does make you, if we've slipped into the weird timeline. And then you realize, no, we are the time, that it, this is, has always been the weird timeline.
I'm starting to wonder if it's a bad ending, though.
Maybe.
Life is a visual novel, and you pick the wrong choice. Yeah. But, anyway. So, yeah, this week we got one big story that we have to talk about because it's sort of started a chain reaction that is pretty much bound to go to the Supreme Court. And I'm going to be completely honest, it's going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a certain new judge on there, I highly doubt it's going to succeed. But on top of that, just in general, you're going to realize just how awful America's political leaders can truly be as people.
Yeah, there's no redeeming qualities this week much, you know?
Just people cynical, sometimes just phenomenally stupid, and at times so self-absorbed and narcissistic that they care for nothing else but holding on to their own power by any means necessary. But, I mean, we did have some good stuff happen this week. It's not all a complete dumpster fire. It's just that, you know, it's
a dumpster fire in the ways that actually affect people's lives.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not just a dumpster fire that happened out in the middle of a desert. It's a dumpster fire that's happening just down the block, and you can smell the fumes from far away.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we'll get into all of that when we get to it. But as first as always, we have to talk about what we've been doing this week, because we're going to be getting into some heavy shit a little later on, and we want to be able to get the happy stuff going first, so that, you know, we can mark off this shit sandwich with some happy buns.
That was a sentence you just said.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. But anyway, so Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I finished Daniel Suarez's new novel, Delta V.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of expecting there to be some sort of really weird, terrifying type of twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that space is, like, always trying to kill you, so that's just kind of how that is.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have to do anything too, you know, scary, because space is just scary. I also, like, realized that this is the first of a three-novel series. So, yeah, it's self-contained in the sense that the story wraps up in a mostly satisfying fashion. But it is not the last in this particular world. He also kind of hinted in an interview that I saw that all of his books are set in the same world. Which is something that I didn't quite catch before, but now that I think about it, it kind of does make sense.
Yeah, but now you also have to think about, like, okay, so if all of his books take place in the same world, then, you know, certain parts can only take place before and after a certain major event that happened in his first novel.
So, it's going to be, I might have to go back and actually just listen to the other ones to see if I could, like, put them all together in the timeline. But, yeah, it was a good book. I very much enjoyed it. Now I'm hoping that the next one gets here soon. He says he's looking to do, like, one a year until he finishes those. So, next year, this time, we'll probably have the next one. So, looking forward to that. So after that, I didn't really feel like getting into any other books, so I just started, decided, you know, maybe I'll look at professional wrestling again and see if I can get back into that. And I came into, a show called, Busted Open Radio. I'm not sure if any of you guys have heard of this. Pat.
Can't say as I have.
No. This is a radio show on Sirius XM. It's they post a lot of their segments over on YouTube. It's hosted by Dave LaGreca and Bully Ray, also known as Bubba Ray Dudley. So it's one of the things that a lot of people probably aren't aware of is that, you know, Bubba Ray Dudley is incredibly intelligent. So he's always got, you know, very insightful commentary, and they have, you know, good guests on, like this week they had Chris Jericho on, and
it was a good interview.
Oh, it was, yeah. Yeah, so, and it led me to discovering that there's a new wrestling promotion opening up called AEW.
Yep.
All Elite Wrestling, yeah. So I've been kind of looking at that and thinking, you know, is there any way that I could watch the debut event that's happening next Saturday legally here in Canada? No, there isn't. I am literally going to have to pirate the event to be able to watch it. So that's unfortunate, guys,
especially with all the money backing it.
Yeah. I mean, Tony Khan can probably afford to throw up a streaming server. I mean, come on. And it's like, it is going to be streamed on one of the app on one app, but that's US only. So it's like, fuck.
It's a fail burger.
Yeah. So it looks like I'll be looking on Sunday for a BitTorrent of of the event, because you don't have any other choice. That's pretty interesting, but I'll just post this link here in the chat, Pat. You can have a look at just the wealth of talent that they've.
I'm well aware.
Yeah,
It's kind of remarkable just how many other promotions that are more established completely missed the boat. These guys have a leg up, and I'm not sure if you found out, they just got their TV deal signed this week to start in the fall.
Yeah, with TNT. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So looking forward to that.
They're going places.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony Khan has money, so.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm looking at some of the talent they've got here. Let's see. They got, mentioned Chris Jericho. Yeah, he's on here. Dustin Rhodes. Kenny Omega, Jackson, they got some good stuff here.
Yeah, they even signed Jim Ross.
Oh shit, they got Aja Kong. That's some fucking broken pixel shit right there. Because they played an FMV women's wrestling game from Japan.
Yeah,
and she was on that, which is a crazy thing. Okay, she's going to be in an American promotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be pretty interesting. So
yeah, the good thing they do is they have a lot of these people also working as part of the organization.
Yeah, they're not actually work. They're not, you know, being contract workers.
Billy Gunn is a producer sort of thing.
Yeah, they actually have like a stake in the company instead of acting as like independent contractors the way Vince McMahon does shit.
Mm-hmm. Which is not really what the term actually means.
Yeah.
They're slave labor, essentially, that just happens to get paid.
They're circus freaks, basically. Yeah. Okay. So, as you were saying, Phil?
Can't really fuck with people that way when the talent owns the company.
Basically, mm-mm. Yeah. So,
That's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the vibe around that company. So, we'll be checking it out, and hopefully there'll be a way for me to watch it in Canada actually legally soon, so that'd be nice. Apart from that, well, I've been dealing with allergies still. I am nicely medicated now, so I'm not sneezing for the past couple of days. That's been nice. So hopefully that persists and will get me through the season. But
cool. Here's hoping.
Yeah. But, apart from that, not a whole hell of a lot. I'll probably be starting on, I think it's the third book of the Imperial Ratch series by Ann Leckie tomorrow. That's Sword Mercy, Justice was the first one, Sword was the second, Mercy is the third. So that's
Series is just amazing, isn't it?
The first two are phenomenal. I haven't read the third yet, so
I'm
waiting to get in on that. That's been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Well, as always, I'm playing Final Fantasy XIV and just going around to my different characters and checking in on my financial holdings, as one does. Sometimes you just kind of have to be the market force. But honestly, I've also been checking out a YouTube show called Final Fantasy XIV Dad of Light, which is a show. It's about a kid who has a very no-nonsense father, you know, Japanese businessman sort of thing. And out of nowhere, when this dad just finally he's out on in town with his kid and says, you know what, let's buy this Nintendo with Final Fantasy III. And so they start to bond over that, and just they both get completely hooked to it because fuck yeah, Final Fantasy III. But eventually the dad gets a promotion, and this is a Japanese company, so you kind of know what that's leading to. It goes all cats in the cradle very quickly. Basically it stays this way until the kid grows up. And the dad...
Oh, I know about this. Let me guess. They decide to rebond over Final Fantasy XIV?
Not quite. It goes there, but not quite. Not quite from that angle. So, basically, the dad gets to age 60, and he's in the running to be the new company president. But out of nowhere, he quits his job.
Yeah.
No, they just look at it like an early retirement. And so what this kid does as a retirement present is he goes out and buys a PlayStation 4 with Final Fantasy 14. And which is not like Final Fantasy 3 at all, and that comes up. And so a good chunk of it is just the dad learning the differences of an MMO. And getting accustomed to the mechanics and the idea of actually playing a video game with other people rather than just playing in proximity of other people. There's one part where I don't remember what class he picks, but it puts him in Gridania to start. And because he doesn't really know modern video games that well, he just leaves town. And the first thing that he does at level one is he aggroes a treant.
No. Well, he did.
So he almost is, because the kid shows up and actually his free company tells him what's going on. He goes out there and puts a stop to it.
Oh my god!
And the dad doesn't have the keyboard yet, so he wanted to thank him, not knowing who it was either.
Yeah.
And so he just like runs three circles around him and runs back to the town. And it's just stuff like that. And I've only watched the first episode so far, but I'm probably going to binge it this weekend. And yeah, just the entire premise of the show is. Maybe a little more wholesome than stuff I'm used to, but I am definitely enjoying it. And other than that, I've also been watching Furikuri Furikuri Progressive,
which is the second season. Yeah.
And I was really reluctant to give it a shot, given the fact that Gainax is not the studio behind it. But damn if Production IG isn't doing a good job.
Well, it's Production IG, dude. You kind of expect a certain level of quality from them.
Oh, for sure.
Way.
But there are some IPs that you just don't really think any studio other than the one that created it could handle properly. And I'm very happy to be mistaken in this case. I'm two episodes into that, but... also, probably something I will be binging this weekend, because I do have Furikuri Progressive and Alternative, so I might have a very weird weekend ahead of me, to be completely honest.
All right. Okay, so Teresa, what about you?
I have been sitting playing Final Fantasy XIV so much. I'm pretty sure I have permanently hurt my thumb. But I haven't been feeling very well. So, yeah, I've just been sitting around. And I worked on my anima weapon. And I wanted to get an apartment. And so I bought an apartment. And I wanted some chocobo wallpaper, but I wasn't going to pay $16,000 for it. Keep in mind, I have like $1.5 million. So I started...
You've been hustling like me.
And, right? So I started leveling up more of my crafting. And I still can't log chocobo feathers with my botanist yet. But I'm really, really, really close. So yeah, I fell way the hell down a rabbit hole there. But got through the first part, well, the first couple of parts of Stormblood, I guess. Maybe the first few major quests. And,
well, we ran the first dungeon the other night.
Yeah, we did. And then
have you gotten to Shisui yet?
Hmm?
Have you gotten to Shisui of the Violet Tides?
No.
Okay.
No, haven't.
That'll be your next dungeon.
Yeah, so I've made it to Zansha or whatever it is, China. Gotcha. I've basically made it to China. And, you know, I know that Lord Hien is alive and that he's been found, but...
Fucking dork.
He is. Yeah, I only saw his profile, so... Or, well, kind of a silhouette of him, not even a profile. And, yeah. We're going to see how this goes.
But, one of the best characters in Stormblood, mind you, but fucking dork. Oh.
Yeah, the antagonist, she's a real bitch.
They go to some interesting places with her.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I can see some stuff coming up with her. But she is a villain that you just love to hate.
Uh-huh.
So,
and a very different kind for Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, right?
There's not really been a Yotsuyu up to this point.
Yeah, this is just simply a personal vendetta.
Yep.
And, you know, there's no redeeming qualities whatsoever about her. Mm. So, yeah, I've been doing that and then watching Hamtaro again, which is super cute. And I'm pretty damn sure none of you have watched Hamtaro. But I like it. So
Cartoon Network for a little while.
It was, yeah. Like
it was on Toonami.
Or something. Why is somebody trying to trade with me in the game? Anyway, client kind of playing.
Oh, I'm right there with you. Don't feel bad.
Yeah. So somebody named Pasta Cup is trading with me. It's wonderful. Mm. I like pastas. Mm. I like pasta. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's really all I've been doing. I didn't really go out and do much this week. This was the first time since my grandmother's funeral a year and a half ago that I missed a Pokemon Daily Spin for Pokemon Go. So, yeah, it was kind of like that.
Okay, but, then.
Yeah, it's just a really boring, long-ass week. Uh-huh. What about you, Chris? What have you been doing?
Yeah, so I've been kind of watching a bunch of stuff this week. I watched I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. It's on Netflix. It's a new like sketch comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly short, about 6 episodes, and they're about like 16 minutes each.
Yeah.
So you can kind of get through it in about an hour and a half. And it's mostly funny. It's a lot of weird humor to it, though. It's kind of hard to describe. Like, the very first like bit they do is kind of one of those commercials for lawyers, like doing a injury compensation kind of thing.
Yeah.
But turns it from, you know, somebody's wronged you to a bit about these construction workers going into your bathroom and shitting in there and then somehow replacing your toilet with one that has a way too small hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then dancing on your couches, calling themselves Turbo Team. As you try to join them, they yell, "No, you can't be part of the Turbo Team." It goes on. It's that kind of humor.
Yeah.
It kind of starts at somewhere that's weird and then just tries to take it as far as it can.
It's like a combination of kind of sounds like something like Kids in the Hall did back in the day, but mixed it with like Picnic Fuck Face.
Making sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some good ones in there. They got a bunch of, notable actors and comedians in there. Like there's a bit with Steven Yeun, where they're at his birthday party, and so like his friends are, you know, showing him their gifts, and Tim Robinson's character gives him a wreath, and like they're like mentioning like, "Oh, I included the gift receipt in case you want to return it." And Steven Yeun doesn't show the same amount of enthusiasm for his wreath as like the previous person.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, "Well, if you really like it, you know, give me the receipt back," sort of thing. And just takes that, and it's like, just kind of escalates it consistently to like, "Oh, well, you won't mind if I eat the receipt now, will you?" Then claims he got sick off of it. And it's like, "So did you shit yourself? Like, didn't wipe properly?" Like that sort of thing. Like somehow, tries to insinuate his hands are infected with poop particles and that's gotten him sick, sort of thing, and ends up somehow turning everybody against Steven Yeun on his birthday at his party, sort of thing. It's like really ridiculous stuff. Some of the bits don't really land too well with me, but for the most part, there's some funny stuff in there. But yeah, it's like an hour and a half long to just go through all of it. So it's kind of quick enough that you can kind of just move on the bad parts.
Mm.
Or the stuff that just doesn't really land. But yeah, it's a pretty neat little series. They have a lot of neat like guest stars in there to do some different bits with them. But yeah, that was pretty good. I also watched Knock Down the House, the documentary about four women that were running for the House.
One of whom was?
AOC.
Yep.
She's a star, and particularly because she's the only one that actually wins her seat.
Yeah.
They all kind of come out of the same like group of candidates.
The sort of same demographic, really.
Yeah, like the Justice Democrats, and whatever other groups they align themselves with. But yeah,
kind of a lot of people. ESA, I think, is one of them.
Yeah. And the one with AOC was particularly interesting just because they show like how Joe Crowley like cared about the area.
Yeah.
In a sense, because he doesn't
also
actually
showed how well AOC acts under pressure.
Yeah.
Because there are points in that thing where it looks like everything's fixing to fall down on top of her and she somehow manages to keep her cool.
Yeah.
So.
Well, she's an intelligent woman and I don't think a lot of people know enough about her, and she's not like a high school dropout or anything.
Yeah, because
she's a college. She went to Boston University. She was a high school teacher for a while. You know, she knows how to deal with bullshit. In other words,
she kind of talks about how her being a bartender was kind of perfect for setting her up for this, as well as like dealing with groups, people that weren't exactly going to be friendly. Always looking for ways to kind of take you down.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff, and working under pressure and all that. Which
and it's
definitely
proven her. She's proven herself so far because they tried to do so much shit to her, and somehow she's managed to just sort of.
Like, even going from just doing like a town hall thing where they had to send a rep for Crowley because he wasn't there.
Yeah.
And she was willing to, you know, play off that, like, thanking the woman that came in for her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a councilwoman, so a local thing. But, you know, being like, "Well, I'm the only one that's actually here, that actually lives here." And, like, even getting Crowley to admit, like, he doesn't live in the Bronx because he doesn't want them to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, actually being a member of, you know, the House or any part of Congress, like, you have to spend the vast majority of your time in Washington, D.C., so I can definitely understand, like, not wanting your family to be closer, but also, like, you, AOC talks about how, you know, it's important to, you know, have family there, you know, have your kids go there so you know, like, the realities of actually living there.
yeah.
And the way to connect with your constituents versus what Crowley did, where they actually got some actual good video of them at, was it a parade or something like that, where he was like meeting with constituents and like people
yeah.
like, yeah, she's an idiot and all this, and you know, I hope you win and all that. And it's like, he's like, oh, she's probably not as stupid as you think, but thanks. Like, a lot of like willing to wow. accept people like shitting on her
mm-hmm.
In a way, and getting him to even talk down on her. It's like, you know, I'm like, oh, who the hell is she? Because I talk about like he never had a primary competitor
yeah.
in 14 years.
Mm-hmm. She was the first one in
yeah, I think
almost a decade and a half. And she basically knocked it out of the park. I mean,
yeah, like her argument, like just doing the campusing was like, hey, would you like to have a choice this mm-hmm. time versus just having this be the only guy you have to
yeah,
choose
right.
or not choose? And it's like, yeah, that's kind of the whole point of the elections is having choices. It'll say whether you want to keep the person that has been doing good or not good work
mm-hmm.
or finding somebody new. And yeah, kind of the whole message is, you know, not everybody's going to win,
mm-hmm.
whether they seem to be, you know, good people for the job or not. But those that do are definitely better for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need is fresh blood in Congress. Because the worst thing we have is people that are, you know, running unopposed and just being establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that was a cool documentary for that, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I end up also just kind of being out and about. I picked up Dragon Ball Super Broly, the movie.
Yeah.
Which is
he's really actually good. Canon now, so.
Yeah, they canonized that. I was kind of hoping they would canonize something else that was in one of the movies, because they do fusion in that.
Mm-hmm.
Which the Potara earrings creates Gogeta in DBZ.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping they would do the other fusion, which in the movies it's Vegito
yeah.
is the, mm-hmm. the actual fusion dance fusion. And this, they kind of canonize it. They go back to Gogeta sort of thing. But I guess this takes place after Super. Is that what it is?
Because mm-hmm.
yeah. I still haven't finished it, so I didn't know what the... I think the red hair stuff must be... Was that in Super early on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so they haven't gotten above Super Saiyan God Super Saiyan
mm-hmm.
form yet, the blue hair.
Yeah.
I think this was the one where they kind of start hinting at stuff about beyond that.
Mm.
At least in the sense of somehow like Goku kind of using Broly's energy at times. But yeah, like the movie looks great. The animation is all great. They managed to inject like 3D animation into it really well.
Mm.
The ways they use that stuff, and just it's always nice to see some of this like animation be able to get, you know, an hour and a half kind of higher budget animation into
mm-hmm.
it. Cause you kind of get used to what like Dragon Ball Z and Super and all that got, you know, do. And then when you get to see like higher quality animations, like, oh yeah, this is kind of the pinnacle of what these guys can do. But yeah, it's really well done. Kind of mm-hmm. like the first two they did before. That kind of ended up being the first two seasons of Super. And yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them having like Frieza be this just never-ending villain.
Mm-hmm. Who's
at least at this point seems to be smart enough to know he can't really take on Goku and Vegeta.
Yeah.
So he just tries to find other people to do his bidding for him. Which is where Broly comes into play. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see. You also get to see like origins for Goku and Vegeta in a way that goes beyond what the original like non-canon movies did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was pretty cool. Also watched Detective Pikachu.
Yeah,
And that was actually good.
Yeah,
not great. You definitely tell they had a time they wanted to get everything done in. as far as how long the movie was, because there's a point where it just starts going super speed. Progression where they don't slow down once like certain revelations come in. It's just like it feels like the whole movie takes place over the course of like 24 hours, where it could have maybe slowed down a bit and taken over the couple days. Because like the last 30 minutes is like just rapid fire pace. There's a really good twist in there where a certain Pokemon shows up where you might not have expected it to. In a really stupid way that adds to it really well. Without really spoiling, it's there's a certain character you see who doesn't do anything. Then you find out why. And right. That's a really good point. Because I was watching it in the morning on Monday. There was like a handful of other people. There was a guy that almost yelled out. It's like, what the fuck?
Really?
Because it was like, they're like just ready to start cursing. Like, they really doing this? Okay. They're on board.
Saw it coming. Like only like 45 seconds in advance, but
yeah, that was interesting the way they did that. And yeah, it's pretty well done. It sets itself up pretty well for future movies if they want to do that. And it kind of got me to check out Pokemon Go.
Oh,
I still don't know how to play it. As far as like what the fuck does that circle mean?
It's your hitbox. So when it's really big, if you get it in the hitbox, you get a nice throw. Okay. If it's medium big, you get a great throw. And if it's very small and you get it right in there, it's an excellent throw. And you get bonus points basically for that.
And, okay, so I completely misread that. I thought it was like you're trying to throw it when it's at the edges.
No.
It's like that's what I was thinking like the whole time. I was like, I have no idea how this makes sense. Sometimes it says nice, sometimes it says awesome.
Well, and later on, if you get into a Discord group and start doing legendary raids with people in your area, there are a few legendaries that do not take kindly to great throws. And so you're better off just doing a nice throw because you're going to be more likely to catch the Pokemon. You're going to get a better catch rate.
Yeah, it seems like they've made the Pokemon better able to either avoid the ball or just break out of it.
Yeah, and you could use Nana Berries to kind of hold them still for a while, and you've got your...
Yeah, that's all the shit I don't know, because I stopped playing for 2 years.
Oh, okay. It's good. There's the community day coming up on Sunday, so...
Yeah, I still have to say the cemetery nearby is still a Pokestop for some reason, which is really weird.
Cemeteries and churches, they pull that data from Ingress, and they just did it. Cemeteries, churches, and libraries are almost always going to be a Pokemon stop.
That's weird. There's a church right near it, but they don't use that. It's the cemetery they went for.
Huh. Funny.
There's also like a Circle K there, and a bank, and a barbershop. A couple barbershops, I think, actually.
Now, the real question is, do they have Slurpees at the Circle K?
I don't know. I have a giant mug. My mom got me a giant mug for Christmas once from there. I'm supposed to take in and get like a free drink.
Nice.
I never took it in though. I think I saw the receipt in there, but why is this from 3 years ago? But I'm also like, I don't want to drive there just to get a fucking mug full of pop.
Did you manage to get your Detective Pikachu special Pokemon during? Well, you had to get it before 3 o'clock today.
I did not know about it, so no.
Oh, yeah. He was the photobomb one. And,
Yeah, I literally just downloaded it and started up and was like, all right, what's going on in this thing? I have no idea really what's anything in depth. I was like, well, I still got some Pokeballs. I just throw them at him. And I get them, and I guess duplicates I should just transfer.
Like you could download Pokegenie and find out what the IV is on it and keep the highest IV one.
Yeah. I think the buddy Pokemon I have is a Zatu, the totem-like Pokemon.
Yep.
My like highest one. My highest like whatever CP, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just use that, I guess.
But download Pokegenie and see if you have any higher level IVs.
I do notice they do like step counting kind of thing.
Yeah,
they now, do. Which I use it for the last 4 days.
Yeah.
I'm at like 45,000 kilometers. Or 45 kilometers.
Keep hatching. So I was like,
that's pretty neat. I don't have any eggs.
Oh.
Again, I don't really know what's going on in this game. So I was like, how do I get eggs?
You have to spin the Pokestops. It won't come from
Pokemon. What is spinning the Pokestops?
When you see a Pokestop, it'll be on your screen.
Okay.
And you tap on it and you spin the photo disc. It'll have a photo of whatever, you know, like if it's a park sign or some crap.
And I want to say it doesn't spin for me for some reason.
You'll try again. It'll spin.
Okay. I don't know.
You got to be close enough to it.
I have to be close to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't drive with this thing in mind. That's not. I go to work, I go home.
Pokemon Go will turn you into the worst driver in the world.
I would like not to be that.
Yeah. No, you want to be that.
Yeah, I had a bad situation driving to work. The 1X that I needed to actually get on the right highway to work was shut down because of some accident. So I spent a good bit of time while driving, turning on my data, pulling up Google Maps, and be like, help me get to work.
Yeah.
And having to follow that. Essentially, I could have done exactly what it was telling me to do if I had not realized too late that they had blocked off the entire road. There's just a cop car with like traffic cones in front of them, like about a couple hundred feet in front of it. I didn't realize they were blocking off the whole thing. Because I thought, well, they must have had an accident and he's just there, so I go around. And like, no. If I would have taken a left instead of going to the right lane, I would have been able to do the normal thing I do when I need a detour onto this other highway. And so I essentially wasted like 15 minutes just getting back on. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I wasn't late or anything, but
that's real stupid. Gas is really expensive right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I could have gotten it for about $4.51, I think, or $2.51.
What?
Yeah.
Suck it.
But I think we're all like under $3 where I live, so...
I think we're generally cheaper here in Ohio than the states around us.
Ours, I got gas today and it was like $3.60-something.
Yeah. Yeah, I can look up Gas Buddy. And... Though I also go to a place where it's generally cheaper than the other places around it.
Hell yeah.
Which is good. And also doesn't do like the 30-cent increase in one day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It goes up a little bit slower, so I have a chance to be like, oh shit, it's going up, I should... go get gas.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, which I always appreciate. Instead of like going on the way home, it's like, oh, this is like 30 cents higher than where I was at before.
Mm-hmm. So there's $4 gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was at, which pissed me off because it was at 244 the other day. I should have filled up then. I still didn't fill up, so I need to go back tomorrow. But yeah. It'd be nice if we get to cheaper electric cars. So I like to not have to sit here and play fucking stock market with gas prices.
Yeah, right.
Like it's Animal Crossing bullshit.
That's about
That's the exact same game he plays.
It is.
Fucking buying those
turnips.
Whatever. Yeah, turnips. It's like, all right, it's going to be real expensive this one day, and we're going to buy it on the cheap because we're going to sell it high. That's the exact same thing you do with gas. Like, okay, I got like... three more days I can drive on this tank. I need it to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes up and you're like, fuck, this plan fucking failed.
I mean, it could be worse. Like, you know, when I was in high school, gas got over $4 a gallon for a little while. So
I think when I started driving, gas was under $2. And then when we had the real bad prices, it was up to like $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could look on Google Maps at... it was like two different time frames on the same street. Look at the gas sign. And it was one that was from a year before where it was $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the year later and it was $1.99.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that dropped out of nowhere.
Yeah. That was also when Obama became president. So
it was the
That was like three or four years ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's when we started really getting heavy on the Dakota guest stuff.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So that was a whole thing, but also been streaming this week, doing a lot of streaming on Twitch. I did PSVR on Sunday. Did a few games there. Dirt Rally was the first one, which I did one race and that was it.
Yeah, I saw that. It looked a little hard.
That game is bad for VR in general because you're constantly shaking the camera. And especially so if you're not good at it. And it does some good things to try to minimize damage where it'll like retract your view a bit in the worst situations. But I also kept driving off the track or flipping my car occasionally.
Did your food stay in?
What's that? Yeah.
Did your food stay in?
Okay. Yeah, like the one race was like, I started feeling a little bit of it, but I was like, yeah, I'm not going to push it, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is if you look into the back of your car, there's nothing there. It's you're driving the front half of your car. That's your car in that game. And that's kind of fun compared to some of the others where they do the whole car. I'm sure that you've seen Phil, Pat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun just looking in the back. Also, I just stick my head outside the window to look around, too. I like the ability to just break the immersion of that is fun. But the other games I played were... I played the Sega Genesis Classics Collection.
Nice.
In VR, which you can do like the... like the 2D thing you've seen, Pat, where it's just this big screen that's projected in. But you can also just pop it out and just play it like you're sitting in front of a TV.
Yeah, we were watching you play Sonic that way.
Yeah, I was playing Sonic. And then I got to the second one. I was like, this is where the game stops being that good.
Well, it looked like... did it feel like the screen was really small to you? Because it looked very small while you were watching.
Yeah, it kind of is. But I think it's also
the kind of TV you would have had back then.
Yeah,
I know. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, and I was like, this is actually pretty nice. I did start with Toe Jam and Earl, and I forgot how to play Toe Jam and Earl, so I was like, this is not a good game to play. Because I couldn't bring up the map button because I was trying to figure out where I needed to go. That game doesn't have, like, either I couldn't find the guide for the game, like, just tell me, like, what the buttons are sort of thing. Like, I know the games didn't have that back then, but I would have figured that collection would have, like, hey, you forgot how to play this. Here's the buttons.
Nope.
Sort of thing. It's like, no, I don't think it does. And I was like, I'm not going to sit here and Google controls for this. So I just moved on to other stuff.
Yeah.
What else did I play? I played Tiny Tracks, which is pretty cool. That is essentially like a slot car racer where you're kind of the camera. So you can kind of move around, look around, and it uses like full 3D style slot car racetracks, set in a variety of different environments. That's a lot of fun. What else did I play? I played Super Hypercube, which, Pat, you need to get that game. That's a lot of fun. It's essentially, what was it? What was it, a game show on Fox? The Wall? Break Down the Wall, something like that. Where essentially they had this like styrofoam wall coming at people with different like holes in it. And the people had to do like poses or try to figure a way to get through it without, you know, breaking it.
Oh yeah, there's probably more than one, but there's a Japanese game show that did that too.
Yeah, I assume
this sounds like it uses the Move controllers.
No, you're not actually physically moving anything, but it's a puzzle game with that idea. So you're kind of at the beginning, you have a block, and so you can just hit I think X, and you just zoom right through it, sort of like Tetris, like a drop in Tetris. So like when and you're looking in the background for the wall and there's a hole with specific shapes on it. And so you're trying to contort the blocks you have to match that hole. So when you have it, you can just sort of drop through it real fast to move on to the next one. And based on different things you have, if you do it real quick, if you find like a shortcut form of your block where like, let's say I have an L shape, a basic L shape, and what comes up is, you know, let's say it's a 3-wide line. So you can sort of flip it, say, to like a 2-line-wide L shape and just zip it through. That's technically a shortcut because you didn't do it the way they thought it was. And so for each, like, bonus thing, it adds on another block to your your little puzzle thing that's happening here. And so each, it gets progressively more complicated as you get more on there, but you get more points that way for every block you get through. And so you're trying to get, you know, high score eventually, like last as long as you can. You get one fuck up, which depending on the hole you're trying to get it through, it'll break off a bunch of pieces. So you might go back down, but you have a better chance to like recover. But as the further you get the ability to like do a quick freeze of everything. And so like you run into like a bad situation, you like freeze it, be like, oh fuck, okay, which way do I want it to go? That sort of thing. And I think you also get a ball to like explode the wall and get past it. But you have to work up to those like special power ups.
Makes sense.
And yeah, it's kind of simple in that way. It just gets increasingly complicated. I think the high score I have is like 600 something. But I think the world high score on the leaderboards is like 15,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but it compounds the way it goes. So yeah, it's a really fun puzzle game. And one that's kind of simple because you're just playing with the DualShock. You're kind of just looking around your puzzle piece for the wall and trying to figure out how you angle things. You turn it to make it fit what you see there.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing is when you fail, it'll actually show you the hole in what puzzle piece you have. And you can sit there and like figure out, oh, I fucked up. I should have turned it this way sort of thing. So it lets you kind of figure out like, oh, this is how I fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was this way and it was actually a different side thing. It's a really well-made game. Definitely.
Is it on one of the demo discs?
It should be, I think. Yeah, I can look that up real quick. But yeah, it. Let's see. I think it's on. Probably be on one.
Okay.
I think I'll double check that. But yeah, that was a fun stream. I also played Harmonix Music VR at the end, That was pretty cool. It's basically like a tech demo kind of thing. But if you don't have moves, you can't do everything that's in there. But there is some cool stuff in there. What I was playing, being Harmonix, it has a lot of music elements to it. The first thing I did was this weird little game that's called like a dance party, where essentially you have a bunch of puppets in this scene and you can kind of move them to the beat and just set up like dance parties with these different puppets. So you can have them do different things based on just how you have their different limbs like move, which is pretty neat. But you can also pick different music for that. I don't know if you can import your own to it. But yeah, that was pretty neat. I think the second thing is kind of, it also has music to it, but it's kind of just going around this beach. And as you look at these specific things, it'll bring up like essentially like new visualizers. They go to music and react to it and all that. And so you can kind of, they have a bunch of songs in the game, some that are set up for specific modes, but you can kind of just set up a playlist and have it go through that stuff for each of the modes. So it's kind of neat. It's not something I would really recommend for the average person. It's very much, you know, if you just want to kind of mess around a little bit in that, but yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. I was trying to get my webcam working with that. And the big issue, I know Phil would know all about this, is it ended up being the privacy settings that fucked up the camera. That would not let it show up. It worked for like 5 minutes, and then it stopped working. So I immediately figured that out after the stream, and I was like, fuck, this pissed me off.
Yeah.
But now I got it working, so now every stream we're doing now, I have that in there somewhere. But yeah, there are more streams I did. I did a Plague Tale Innocence. I got a code for that. That's pretty cool. I'll probably talk more about it on Sunday because I'm doing that, doing a second stream for that tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. I'm looking forward to playing some more. I played through the first three chapters and we're just going to continue from there. It's not a game you want to play if you're looking to be cheered up. It's a game about the plague.
Yeah.
In France, I think you're in. And it's pretty cool. Let's see. Wednesday, I did a stream with Undead Horde, which is the new 10 Tons game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty cool, and that's something that's way beyond whatever they've done before.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's not a dual-stick shooter, like a single-screen dual-stick shooter. It is kind of You're a necromancer, sort of resurrecting hordes of enemies to work with you to take down the good guys, I guess, the living. Mm. You kind of had this fairly big, each of the different areas are pretty big, but also there's an overall map of areas you can move to. And sort of as you get teleport points, you can kind of move between them pretty quickly. But you're kind of doing quests, getting XP, leveling up, you know, increasing your ability to have more people under your control, and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, that's pretty cool. I'll talk more about that on Sunday. But yesterday's stream was Rock of Ages 2, Bigger and Bolder. And that was a hilarious stream to do.
Oh,
that game
I'm sure it was.
Fucking hilarious.
Yep.
So the last game was about Sisyphus, who, if you know your Greek mythology, it's a person who was essentially doomed to push a boulder up a hill only to have it fall down.
Like, mm-hmm.
I have to do that every single day. This time it's about Atlas, who holds up the world,
mm-hmm.
Except at the beginning of the game he fucks up and drops the world.
Yep.
And that's how the continents were created.
I had one job.
Pangaea. But he dropped it and broke the continents into seven continents.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sort of fast forward to, I forget who he was teaching different military leaders like Napoleon and some others, like every great battle in history was won with a boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking like Napoleon how he would win a battle. He actually described his actual military strategy of, you know, tricking them and all that stuff. And he's like, no, it was a boulder. The art style is great. It's Monty Python style, silly historical kind of art.
Mm-hmm.
And here you're kind of Atlas pushing this boulder around to take down various historical and art history assholes. Like I killed Vincent Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the painting of The Scream. I killed that guy.
Edvard Munch.
Yeah. I just killed the character itself. I killed a burning giraffe. I don't know where that was from. I lost a Don Quixote. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very silly. It's a pretty cool game. I was playing the Switch version, which did not have any multiplayer going. Any rooms, at least. That doesn't mean people weren't playing, but I was looking at leaderboards for some of the side content. And there's like, some of them just have like one or two people, which that's not the content you would really play in that. You play the campaign just for all the silly cutscenes and all that. There is a good Pokemon reference in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like Atlas is just going through this like top down world, but then runs into a field of grass and goes in it and fights Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to the Garden of Eden, and so Adam and Eve, and they fight with Snake, with their Snake Pokemon.
Did anyone involved in this game take a drug test?
Probably not. They're from Chile. Probably plenty of opportunities for that. It's Ace Team. Made a Xeno Clash and a few other games like that. They do really cool art styles that are just weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're good at. And the fun thing is that little Pokemon battle ends with you throwing apples into their mouths. the apples, which was
take
pretty
that.
Fun. Yeah. And that's how you take them down. But I ended up losing the battle with them because it was all platforming because it's essentially in the platforms in the sky. And I suck at the platforming, so I got beat. But yeah, it was pretty cool. But yeah, we're going to be doing some more streams this weekend. A Plague Tale Innocence is tomorrow. I don't know what Sunday is. Probably another Game Pass game.
Mm.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. That's kind of been it. Just a lot of busy shit.
All right. My turn. So, my primary gaming for this week has been taken up by Dragon Quest XI.
It has that tendency.
Yeah. After, you know, I'd finished Vesperia, I kind of had a JRPG-sized hole in my life that needed to be filled. And I realized I hadn't played this yet. You know, even though it came out, months ago and was like a big critical success and made a tons of money, and I know Leith certainly loved it, but so Dragon Quest XI, it's basically the Pretty sure it's the first, like, fully 3D Dragon Quest they've done since, what was it, 8? Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure 9 and 10 were, like, for handhelds, weren't they?
Yeah.
One of them was an MMO.
9 was DS.
Mm-hmm.
10 was a Wii game, a Wii MMO.
Right. So, you know, it's a Dragon Quest game, so you go into that, and there are things that you expect. You know, the dragon, you know, it's going to, basically going to be, okay, so most Dragon Quest games, even though Dragon Quest itself is considered to be, like, the basically the godfather of the modern JRPG, they're not exactly known for having the most enthralling of plot.
No.
That's more, that's sort of the niche Final Fantasy ended up filling.
Yeah, they kind of just do anime plots.
Yeah. Not so much with Dragon Quest XI. Dragon Quest XI is actually really well written. I mean, it's not like Final Fantasy levels of complex, but, you know, it's definitely got its moments. And it definitely makes the world feel real, which is really unnerving, because if you think about it, the world of Dragon Quest is fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Because at any moment, you can basically be murdered by a small blue jelly thing. It's...
Yeah. It's like if they had the Pokemon show up all over the place in Pokemon games.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what the most recent one did.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, so basically in this game, you're playing a sort of blank slate character, you know, who doesn't actually talk because, you know, he's the protagonist, so... Can't talk. And he's essentially, he was born in this little place. Well, he wasn't actually born there, but he was raised in this little hole-in-the-wall town in the mountains called. And he finds out that he's this thing called the Luminary, which is, like, supposed to be this, fated messiah that'll fight out the Dark Lord, that kind of thing. Very standard. But then what happens is... You know, you find this thing that's supposed to give you some instructions about what you're supposed to do, and you have to go to this kingdom and talk to this king. Then the king has you locked up and set for execution, because he is convinced that if he kills you, then the whole sort of cycle of the hero fighting the Dark Lord will actually stop. So, you know, you end up doing that, and then... After that, it's basically Dragon Quest. It's a weird world with weird people in it.
Yeah.
With lots of weird shit enemies that really make no goddamn thematic sense if you really think about it. But considering the fact that, you know, this is Toriyama's imagery we're talking about, that's kind of par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a world in which... Yeah, I mean, this is a world in which you can come across slimes, zombies, skeletons, and fucking robots with, like, lasers and shit, all in the same world. Like, what the fuck?
All the different kinds of anime characters you might think. They're probably a monster in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also I experienced Puff-Puff.
What is always your first time?
We'll have to play the game to find out.
But if you watched any... any Akira Toriyama shows, it's probably popped up in there.
Yep.
Dragon Ball definitely had some.
Oh, yeah, Dragon Ball
did. That's a big focus of the early part of it, that first saga.
Yeah. Dr. Slump also had a bunch of references as well.
Yeah.
So right now, the last big boss I fought was the Arachnoid, something like that. And that was less a battle and more of goddamn war of attrition, because it may be one of the worst designed boss battles I've ever encountered, because it specifically hinges on the fact that you have this AI character that's in your party that you can't... He becomes a member of your party eventually, but at the time that you're doing this boss fight, he's still technically a hanger-on. And he's got, like, these really big, like, spells that pretty advanced. Like, he's got, like, mid-heal, which is, like, the stronger version of the regular heal spell, which can basically give you back almost all of the life points you've got at that point. He has Zam, which is this really powerful shadow spell that can knock out, like, up to, like, 53 hit points out of an enemy. And then he also has the, I forget what it's called, but it's the resurrection spell. And if you know anything about Dragon Quest games, resurrection spells are almost non-existent. If you want to actually resurrect a character, you usually have to go back to a chapel and specifically ask for that service from the priest. And the thing is, the actual Arachnagon himself, he's got these really nasty spells that can like hit you with a bunch of like, poison and confusion all at the same time. He can also like spit out web that will like tie you up and keep you bound for like two turns. And he also has There's one more. Oh yeah, he has this really annoying, spine attack where he shoots like spines out of his back like missiles, and it like takes like 40 points of hit damage out of the entire party. So he's like, okay, all that's ugly and whatever, but okay, so what's the problem? The problem is, again, in order to resurrect a character, you have to, up to this point, you have to take them over to the chapel and resurrect them. Now, the guy that's your hanger-on, he has the resurrection spell, but because he's an AI character, he's the one who decides if he's ever going to use it or not. And the worst part is, there's a good, like a 4-to-1 chance that it won't even succeed, that it'll actually miss. So
he sucks at his job.
Yeah, so you've got that. You've got this super pissed off, angry giant spider that you're fighting that can basically knock off your ability to use spells, to confuse you, to poison you, all within maybe one or two turns. And then he can bound you, and then he can hit you with that spine attack, and then, you know, you're basically may be reduced down to just one character that you can use for a long enough time. And in this case, it was Serena. And the reason she did it was because she was the only other character. Serena is the magician, the sorceress character that has all of the, I guess you could call it the white magic. You know, the cure spells and the heal spells.
Healing magic and all that.
Yeah, all of that. And she also has like a bunch of like magic points. So, you know, I was sort of able to sort of do it out as like a war of attrition. And then twice I managed to get lucky with the hanger-on who managed to, resurrect two of my characters. One of them, I was able to envenom the boss character, so he would, every couple of turns, get an extra 50 hit points knocked out of him. But can you see why this is like one of the worst designed boss battles ever? Also, this was like the first major dungeon I had encountered that didn't have like a campsite inside of it. So I couldn't just like go back to the campsite and like resurrect my character. No, I had to go out of the dungeon, go back into the town, to the chapel, to talk to the priest, to resurrect any characters that were dead.
Which area was this in?
This is the caves under Octagonia.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, with that being said, the game is still fantastic. I mean, it's freaking Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
You
know what you're getting.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, Toriyama's art design is always just a joy to play in because it's so whimsical, you know, but other than that, just my usual reading. I've been reading this book. It's a fairly recent one, I think. It came out a couple weeks ago. It's called Waste Tide, and it's by Ching Q Fan. This is one of the recent books that was translated by Ken Liu, who, for those you don't know, he's the guy who translated the Three Body Problem into English. And basically, this book is basically a near-future story about a sort of a, I guess you could call it a trash island that starts building up off the coast of Japan, off the coast of the People's Republic of China. Now, you guys have heard of Trash, the actual Trash Island before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
absolutely.
Well, imagine that, but this Trash Island is like actually centered on, I can't remember, I'm not far enough yet if this was like already an island that was there or was an artificial island, but the waste is like the waste that comes from like electronics and plastics and all that stuff is so like bad that it starts basically becoming the island starts to become more trash than island. So, like, you know, you go to the beach and it's like all black and it's littered with like old iPhone parts and stuff. You know, there's like a bunch of people that are lured to work there because, you know, if you, you know, it's to process old electronics, you know. So, you know, you take them to either the furnaces or the acid baths to sort of break them down to the essential tin and copper and all that stuff. This is stuff that already goes on today. You know, that you'll see stuff like that. They do shit like this in like sub-Saharan Africa, in India, around Bangladesh, stuff like this. And it's really good because basically what ends up happening is that this whole like artificial island, the people on it start creating like their own society. And it threatens to turn into like an all out war with the People's Republic of China. It's damn good. I highly recommend it. Other than that, anime. I watched a classic anime film from back in the day recently, one that I hadn't seen in some years. I mean, you guys remember Project Aiko?
Yes.
Yep.
Rumiko Takahashi.
Huh?
Rumiko Takahashi.
Yep. No. She was not involved in that one.
Really?
No. But...
could have sworn
he was not involved. No. However, there was a famous manga artist who was involved, although he didn't go by the name he was famous with. I'm trying to remember. Goddamn. Kiya Asamiya, the guy behind Silent Mobius and Martian Successor Nadeseiko. Yeah, this is one of the big and major anime projects he worked on before he went full on in his manga career. But basically, if you're like a fan of like old school, like 80s anime, you absolutely have to watch Project Aiko.
Yes.
Because it is loaded with so many references and jokes and all kinds of stuff, specifically about, you know, anime culture at that time period. There's references to Captain Harlock, Fist of the North Star, Superman and Wonder Woman, Urusei Yatsura, Ken Akuman, you know, Ultimate Muscle.
Yeah.
I think there's like one or two Gundam references in there as well.
It made an effort to be an emblem of its time.
Yeah, it is very much a time capsule of that time period. And it still holds up, too. It is laugh-out-loud funny. Even if, you know, Seiko is probably the most annoying goddamn character in anime history.
It's true.
Like, why the hell do these two chicks want to fuck her so badly? Like, seriously. Wow, it got quiet all of a sudden.
That wasn't a rhetorical question? You wanted an answer?
We had no answers.
okay, look, it's the subterfuge is there. Okay, it's very obvious what this is supposed to be about, but it's Japan in the mid-80s, and this isn't a hint. Actually, you know what? I forgot to mention. This originally was going to be a hentai. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Yeah, Project Aiko originally was going to be part of the cream of the, what was it called? The Cream Lemon series, which was like a whole like series of hentai OVAs that were like really popular in the late 80s, and it ended up taking like a weird sharp left turn like halfway during pre-production. That's why you have that skinny dipping scene with Biko in the middle of the movie. Because that's originally from when it was going to be a hentai. No joke. Anyway. Yeah. pretty much that's about it. We're going to be having another new member of the family joining us Friday.
Oh.
Got a new dog.
Yeah?
Yeah. His name's Brody. He's a little Sheltie like Toby was. But he's lighter. His fur is a lighter color. But yeah, the parents are going to go get him Friday. But yeah, so other than that, anything else we want to add on before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Chris, you got to get on some of that Wipeout Omega collection, because I noticed you'd set some pretty good zone mode scores.
Yeah, I've played some of that in VR.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did a video of that back in the day when that first came out. But yeah, that's cool.
All right.
Zone mode's kind of perfect for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then. It's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I'm going to continue the sort of series I started with last week's show. Those who don't remember who didn't listen to last week's show, first of all, shame on you. Bastard.
Wow. But
what we did is I'm going to start for the next couple of weeks doing Brandon's Random Factoid on some of the what are generally called the four major figures of Japanese science fiction. Normally people talk about the big three, but there's a fourth individual I put in there simply because he originally was one of the big three, but got replaced by our first entry sort of, I think, sometime in the 80s after he passed away. Mm. But we'll be talking to him later on. But he's the one I'm going to be saving because he inadvertently started something here that we all in this room, in this chat, love. And it will surprise you what it is. But that's going to be for another time. Today, I'm going to talk about the next person of the big four of Japanese science fiction. And he is probably the second most published of the four in here, in that he's only had two or three of his books actually published in English. Whereas our last one, Yasutaka Tsutsui, has had at least six or seven. The second one we're going to talk about today is the guy who's generally considered, like, in Japan, when people thought of Mr. Science Fiction, he was the go-to guy. A gentleman by the name of Sakyo Komatsu. Mm-hmm. Now, if Yoshitaka Tsutsui was sort of like Japan's version of, like, Kurt Vonnegut, Komatsu is more of like Arthur C. Clarke, in that he is more heavily based around, like, very hardcore science fiction concepts that can have like basis in real hard science, and he uses them to create these very exciting narratives that were major cultural phenomenons when they were originally published. So Komatsu originally started out his writing career in the 1960s. Before that, he'd worked for a magazine reporter and was a gag writer for various stand-up comedians. And when he was a young person, he actually tried to enter the manga market. Because in the 50s, after Osamu Tezuka like made it huge with like Astro Boy and Jungle Leap or Leo, and manga became like a major cultural thing, a whole bunch of young people basically tried to rush into the big manga magazines to make it big. A lot of these people would eventually go on to be like famous film directors, actors, musicians. Komatsu was one of these people. And in fact, after he passed away, there was a sort of a box set called Mabaroshi no Komatsu Sakyo Moro Minoru Manga Zenshu, which is basically a box set of all of the manga stories that he drew way back in the 50s, all in their individual hardbound volumes. God damn, that was a tongue twister. Anyway, so originally when he started, he first submitted a story in 1961 to SF Magazine, which is like the mainline science fiction magazine in Japan for their first story context back in 1961. The story that he submitted was a short story called Peace on Earth, which is basically an alternate history in which the Allies, instead of deciding to use the atom bomb, they forego that and instead decide to go for the other plan. You guys remember what the other plan was? Full-on invasion?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And the story is sort of like a young man getting ready to prepare to defend the country against the Allied invasion. He didn't win that contest, but he did receive an honorable mention. He got about 5,000 yen in prize money. The following year, though, he put out a story called Memoirs of an Eccentric Time Traveler. That one actually won. At the same time, he released a novel called The Japanese Apache, which is basically about a... Yet again, it's another post-World War II alternate history story wherein the Japanese government, instead of creating a right-to-work law, create a duty-to-work law. And basically, if you are unemployed, you're considered an enemy of the state and are cast out of Japan into a artificial island that's basically ruled over by – well, they're in the book, they're called Apaches, but not like actual American Indian Apaches, but like – the word that was used like in Europe and France for like street gangs that would call themselves Apaches. So that was his first book. And he then put out another book called Virus, which, well, in original Japanese, it was Fukatsu no Hi. This book would eventually see its way to English in 2012 as Virus, The Day of Resurrection. Do you guys remember a book from back in the day called The Andromeda Strain?
Yeah.
Which was about, like, a satellite crashing to Earth, and it accidentally brings a space germs with it that causes, like, a plague.
Yeah. Wasn't that a Crichton?
Yeah, it was Michael Crichton, but they did a really crappy movie adaptation, and I think they tried to do a TV series, which was a little bit more successful. But
yeah. This is basically that same plot, except that this one ends up spending two space germs. It was originally published in 1964, and it's basically post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Why have one space germ when you can have two?
Yeah. And actually, now that I think about it, I don't think the Andromeda Strain was published until like the late 60s. So Komatsu got on that a few years earlier. But then in the early 70s, in 1973... he published the book that would make him a literary superstar in his native Japan, a book that was so popular it inspired movies, a manga series that was drawn by Takao Saito, the guy behind Golga 13, a sequel that would be published posthumously later on, and a bunch of manga collections that essentially were tributes to the story by various manga artists.
Okay.
The book was called Japan Sinks, and it is exactly what it says on the tin. Mm. Basically, Mount Fuji becomes active again, which triggers a bunch of a chain reaction of national disasters that ultimately ends with a massive earthquake that causes an enormous tsunami that floods the entire island of Japan. And it's basically the story of all the Japanese refugees trying to make their home outside of their now non-existent island, the refugee crisis that they face, and trying to keep the idea of a Japanese culture when Japan itself no longer exists. Is this starting to sound slightly familiar? A certain something that happened back in 2011?
Yep.
Yeah. So as you can guess, this book made him super popular. He started going on talk shows, quiz shows. He became a celebrity, basically. And, you know, he would keep that celebrity well into the day he died at the age of 80 in 2011. Yeah, he actually died literally just a couple months after the Tohoku earthquake. And the one other, like, I mean, he kept publishing, obviously, after that. But he didn't, he started slowing down, like, to that point. He actually published only, I think, let's see, 5 novels after that. Actually, one of them was unfinished and had to be reworked and finally published in 2000. And the only other like major book to come out of that was a book he wrote called Sayonara Jupiter, which is a 2-volume novel where the human population has grown so large that it can no longer stay on Earth. So they've begun to spread out throughout space and are now attempting to turn the Jupiter, you know, the planet Jupiter, and turn it into a new sun so that they can use some of the surrounding planets more habitable. This is also interesting because Komatsu would later make his debut as a film director, where he would direct the film version of this novel, which had a, you know, I mean, I say he was director, he co-directed it with Koji Hashimoto, who is like more of a proper film director, but Komatsu was like in the major directing chair. I've been drinking. It also has the distinction of being like the original Godzilla series in that, not the original series, but the original Godzilla movie, where in order to have a Western audience, they tacked on a bunch of Western actors for a separate section of the movie so that they hoped that they could appeal to the Western demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really work out that well. Much like how it worked with the original Godzilla.
Yeah.
It was a little better, the original cut that they had. I got to see that at the Music Box Theater downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite so bad. But, yeah, no Raymond Burr. No, no.
Mm-hmm. So in his later years, he actually started publishing a magazine with his name on it that was a quarterly. He would occasionally put articles, he would reprint some of his old stories, and introduce some new science, some of the younger stories from the younger generation. Until finally, you know, a couple months after the 2011 tsunami, he passed away at the age of 80 from complications from pneumonia. The last issue of his magazine was dedicated to his thoughts about the 2011 tsunami. A quote from that is, "I had thought I wouldn't mind dying any day, but now I'm feeling like living a little bit longer and seeing how Japan will go on hereafter." And yeah, that's a hell of a legacy.
Yeah.
And that was yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. So yeah, that so Virus, Japan Sinks, and Sayonara Jupiter all have English editions. Virus is the most recent one and probably the one that's the easiest to get a hold of. The Japan Sinks one was actually one of the English books produced by Kodansha. And those books can be super fucking expensive if you don't know where to look.
I bet.
And Sayonara Jupiter, even more so. Yeah. All right. So, with that out of the way, we now have to get to the nonsense in the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week is Governor Kay Ivey and the assholes in Alabama, who this week published the... signed into law the single most restrictive abortion law in the country.
Yep.
I don't know how it compares to the Missouri one that was put into law, I think, today.
I think they're still waiting on the governor to sign it.
Yeah.
I guess the main reason I don't have it on here is because, like, it's not 100% official yet.
Yeah.
We got an asshole week for next week already. So
yeah.
We're just figuring out if he's got a company or not. Yeah. But yeah, this one is has a lot of interesting things about it. So the people that all voted for it, all white men.
Yep.
There are three women in their Congress, or state Congress, and One voted against it, mm-hmm. one abstained, and one just didn't vote at all.
Blood traitor.
And basically just there was no hope of any women really changing anything here. It would literally just be the voters changing out the people
mm-hmm.
that are voting for this. So essentially they got kind of what I guess the voters in general wanted. Even though it's
not probably one of
the
up.
Yeah, it's the most severe bill we've seen so far. Total ban on abortion. No exceptions for rape or incest or anything like that.
Nope.
Which was the plan.
Yeah.
Because they're going to take this and throw it at Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, that's the thing. That's the reason why these chain of abortion laws are now happening. Because
they're trying to get worse and worse.
Yeah, they're specifically trying to toss the ball at the Supreme Court. And here's the thing. I think that their confidence is misplaced. I really do. Despite the fact that, yes, Brett Kavanaugh is a justice now, I really do not expect them to overturn Roe v. Wade in the slightest. And they're basically going to be wasting the time, not just of the Supreme Court, but of the taxpayers as well.
And the money.
For all of this fucking, for these stupid-ass stunts.
It's just a little circus act. This is all this is.
Yeah,
but it's going to have horrible consequences for women of Alabama.
Because I've talked about this before. I'll go ahead and say it again because it's relevant. All of this that has happened, the whole pro-life issue, the anti-abortion movement as we know it, all of it, 100% of it, was born specifically out of a cynical political ploy by the Republican Party in order to have a stable of reliable voters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the reason that happened is because Bob Jones University was forced to integrate in the early 70s. What we like to call the religious right, they weren't originally born from Roe v. Wade. No, they were born from that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why you had people like, you know, fucking Jerry Falwell, who was an ardent segregationist back in the 60s, mm-hmm. you know, and Paul Weyrich, the Machiavellian mastermind who helped put all this shit together, famously said during a convention of the Christian Coalition that he didn't want everyone in the United States to vote because elections did not matter in this country then and they don't matter now. You know, that's why, you know, you have Frank Schaefer, the son of Francis Schaefer, now basically doing an apology tour over the last decade for ever starting this whole monster in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because none of these assholes actually give a shit about this. Well, okay, let me replace that. A lot of them do now because they grew up they grew up as true believers in the atmosphere of this bullshit.
Right, they ended up getting brainwashed by something that was not started in sincerity.
Yeah. Even the Catholic Church, which is famously anti-abortion, did not make a big stink about it until after Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. Because even then, they thought it was too political. And remember, this was post-World War II when, you know, the Catholic Church was not did not have the best reputation afterwards.
Yeah. And yeah, it's the Republican Party has just become brazenly disingenuous in ways that our democracy was not built for.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous to have, you know, Trump just lies constantly. And he lies at such a volume that it's impossible to really do anything about any individual lie. Other than say, you know, calling him out for it.
Yeah.
Then he just moves on to the next thing. And that's sort of what keeps going.
Yeah.
And that's trickled down into all these state legislatures and all that because they've been brazenly honest about what their goal is for all this stuff. Georgia said the same thing, like, hey, we're aiming for Roe v. Wade and all that.
Also, needed reminder, our governor cheated to win the election. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, what's her name? Never even really conceded. She's just admitted to Veet.
Yeah.
Not having the ability to really contest.
Yeah, that's true.
The whole thing. And it's like, yeah, that definitely says a lot. And we'll have a story about further things about elections later on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's also a bit of hypocrisy in this, in that, so yeah, when she went to sign this, they did a whole tweet thing saying, today I signed into law the Alabama Human Life Protection Act. To the bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabamians' deeply held belief that every life is precious, that every life is a sacred gift from God.
Which, by the way, I should also point out, this governor has executed 6 people in Alabama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Less than 24 hours later, they executed another person. So apparently his life wasn't that precious or a sacred gift from God. We know, just in general Republican platforms, that they do not really support pro-life.
And you have to understand that this is also a desperation move.
Yeah.
Because if this goes to the Supreme Court and it loses again, and like not only does that, but the Supreme Court actually makes it clear that this is final and don't fucking waste our time with this shit again, a good chunk of like the grifting industry in the conservative political movement will collapse like overnight.
Yeah, and
because they make money off this shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, the majority of Americans support abortion in at least
some we do. Form.
In every state, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
There's no exceptions. It's when you bring into things like total bans or time frames into account and all that sort of stuff is where things can differ. But in general, like at least in certain instances like rape and incest and all that, people support it, your ability to do it. And this, like, not even having those exceptions is just pure evil.
Yeah. Because you brought it up, I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's so bad that even Pat Robertson opposes this.
Right.
Even Tammy Lauren opposes
Tommy
it.
Tammy Lauren, yes.
It's like, oh, so you found the issue to the degree that you get the super religious people are offended by this. Like, they're going a little too far with this.
Now, I want to be clear. Robertson doesn't oppose this on a principled basis. He opposes it because he thinks it's too strong of a case to bring forward the Supreme Court.
Yep. Yeah, it's too obvious. And it's also – so they're not banning abortion. They're banning safe abortion. Because people will still do it in a desperate act of desperation. Mm-hmm. Like I think there was somebody that was outside the legislature house protesting, just holding coat hangers. Like, here's how you're going to do abortions from now on. And it's like, you absolutely, as like civilized people, should not be advocating that that's how people should do it. Because it's, again, you're not banning abortion. You're banning safe abortion.
Mm-hmm.
By professionals. And so, yeah, like we had something come up. I have to look at the story. It actually happened here in town of an 11-year-old girl that got raped. And essentially because of the law, she seems like she's going to have to carry that kid to term.
Yeah.
And
if it miscarries, they're going to have to open up a investigation into whether or not she had an abortion.
Yeah, and it's like, in Alabama, essentially, you have to decide, like, is it a 99-year prison sentence worth this, or, you know, not having to carry a kid that was created through a despicable act.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the situation you're endorsing from now on as your state legislature.
And also, again, one of the reasons why I really do not think that the Supreme Court's going to uphold this shit.
Yeah.
I really do not.
Can they say, don't ever bring this before us again?
They can't. Well, I want to say they can, but I'm not.
They can in a binding way.
Yeah, they can make it in a binding way that.
Very memorable dressings down.
Yeah. I hate the fact that this is the way that our politics have gone in this country, that we have to do these big fucking publicity stunts to take to the Supreme Court to actually make law in this country.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's kind of broken.
Yeah.
And, it's a lot broken.
Yeah.
And Pat, I'm guessing you wanted to have something you wanted to say.
I just think the theocrats in this country have been emboldened and gotten so out of control that I think that it's time we can give up on so-called civil discourse.
Civility politics is what it's
called.
And it's not – here's the thing. Civility politics isn't actually about civility and discourse. It's literally about creating a bubble of faux civility around them so that
– And up until this point, it's fucking worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though, you know, they're facing opposition, they're still finding success in hiding behind, well, we have these positions because of our deeply held religious views. And I think what it's going to take to fight that in
is to say, fuck your religious views.
Fuck your religious views. Fuck
and
your
use
God,
those words, too,
and fuck
by the way,
you for trying to impose them on others.
And see, the problem is that we've been on the defensive so long that we've let the pro-lifers define the fucking debate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
It's time to go back on offense.
Yep.
And I mean seriously on offense. Yep. I don't mean just counter-protest. I mean you need to start picketing these organizations' headquarters.
Yeah.
I'm even saying you mean it means
all
start
over
breaking
social
a few
media.
Windows.
You need to be all over social media. You need to be all over every conversation that you find yourself in.
Yeah.
You know, you need to oppose it with every fiber of your being that this kind of theological sort of dominance of the culture is not going to be stood for.
And the thing is, for so long we've been semi-passive, and the reason is because we have this, again, a false concept of thinking like, you know, it's that whole thing, you know, they go low, we go high, that Michelle Obama said. And I appreciate the sentiment, but it's long since been shown now that the opposition does not have a moral center anymore.
Yeah, it's not, you can't ignore the troll.
So now we need a more belligerent secularism that that will just oppose theocracy and all that would impose it with everything that it's got.
Yeah, you can't just let religion be a blanket shield.
Well,
no, nothing backing it up.
It's time to stop being respectful.
Religion has absolutely hijacked American politics.
Yeah, and
we do have to fight back.
Yeah, just look what was it, Rashida Tlaib that was talking about the Holocaust?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she didn't say anything bad about it. She said she took comfort in knowing that Palestinians helped out Israelis during the Holocaust. And I think there's issues with that historically, but otherwise it got hijacked and turned into her being anti-Semitic, taking comfort in Jews being killed in the Holocaust thing, where it's like, no, you're just
That's
being deliberately
not what she said.
To turn this around to attack other people for the sake of religion. And it's like, no part of your religion says this is the thing you're encouraged to do, to accuse people of awful things, of saying awful things that were not said and all this shit. And it's like, that's just fucking you being an asshole, using religion as a shield. Be like, well, I'm not actually an asshole. This is just my religious beliefs. It's like, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're an asshole. That's it.
Get the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah. And it, you know, with all the scandals of abusing children with religion, we should not be allowing religion to be used as a shield to protect assholes.
Hell no.
Because we've unfortunately let that stuff go
all
for far too long.
Groups? Yeah. We need to start calling out all the little shelter groups that are causing harm to not just children, like religion, like some homeschoolers, like anti-vaxxers.
It's time. Yeah. This is a call to action, people. Don't take this shit anymore.
The good religious people need to take back their religion from the assholes.
Yeah.
Because they've let those people take it and run with it and do whatever the fuck they wanted with it.
All right.
And circling back to the abortion issue, I think that one way that the religious right has kind of hijacked the entire discussion is by using the word baby or child to describe any stage of development.
Yeah.
And so,
Because there is a heartbeat at what, I think 8 weeks,
Here's the thing. It's not even really a heartbeat.
It's not. There isn't even a heart. Right. There's a lot of things that have a circulatory system that are not babies.
Yeah. I mean, like a leaf, for example.
Yeah.
Where was it that somebody in the legislature was talking about the baby fetus? Baby fetus. It was some weird thing I saw. I think it might have been on Patriot Act that was talking about this, but somebody was referring to like a letter from baby fetus.
Mm-hmm.
As like the name of the baby is fetus.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been John Oliver. I forget what, but it was fucked up. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's not even alive and you give more of a damn about this thing than anybody else in the entire country.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know what? Universal health care, that's pro-life. Because you're trying to make everybody's lives better.
Yep.
And see, here's the thing, though. The pro-life people that are outside of the U.S., they actually do support that kind of thing. They support opposition to the death penalty. They support, strong welfare state.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous in this country because it is essentially reasonable people versus unreasonable people.
Yeah.
And right now, the unreasonable people have kind of taken over a lot of local city and state legislatures and created all these sorts of ridiculous fucking laws and just created the whole narrative that, you know, we can't do universal health care because our taxes will go up. Guess what? Your taxes are being used for bullshit right now.
Mm-hmm.
Use it for something
that makes your lives
better and easier.
Yeah.
We don't need no fucking Space Force, because we'll get to that why people are suggesting we still need the Space Force.
Yeah.
We don't need to spend so much damn money on the military when they're not any major wars that we're fighting that are important. It's just bullshit people like Trump trying to wave his dick around.
Mm-hmm.
Start shit and places that don't need it.
Yeah. But so, fortunately, it's not all.
I'm going to finish.
Go ahead.
I'm going to finish my point. We've let the religious right just project all of this terminology onto the discussion, and it's leading to situations like this. I think what has to happen now is the left is going to have to start asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe not attack abortion from the perspective of destroying, you know, whatever it is, fetus, you know, whatever it might be at any given point.
Not like the straw man of the woman getting back at the guy by having the abortion for fun.
Yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. it's not whatever it is.
That doesn't happen.
Because I think when you stop talking about whether there is a right to destroy a fetus or an embryo or whatever it happens to be, and start talking about whether there is a right to have the removal thereof,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what happens thereafter, now you've got just reams of history of legal precedent that supports that right is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be the next step.
Yeah, it's figuring out how to counter the unreasonable claims that they're making.
Yep.
The right questions.
And even if somebody says, no, you don't have the right to destroy this, okay, but she can want it gone.
Yeah. Be like,
and whatever happens, make it a ward of the state and do whatever you can to save it. You know, fund incubation technology if you feel so inclined. Whatever the case, the removal is well within her rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you probably have to rephrase it in the terms of like back alley abortions. Like, would you rather they do it this way? So like how we've started doing it with drugs, like would you rather them sit there and do, you know, with dirty needles and all this shit instead of having, you know, needle exchange programs.
Yep.
Like, at least if you're going to have people do it anyway, because guess what? You're not going to be able to eliminate drugs completely. You have to at least allow ways for people to do it as safe as possible so that hopefully they don't kill themselves and maybe have chances to, you know, get back into rehab or whatever to get back off of those drugs. And the same with, like, abortion in that way.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, we don't want these people, you know, actually using co-hangers or trying to find the right mix of drugs that causes a miscarriage and all this sort of stuff. Like, you get them, you know, out of those bad situations, then maybe help them make better choices in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. But fortunately, it's not all bastards who are heading up politics this year. This week, because fortunately we have our heroes of the week, the House of Representatives, who passed the Equality Act to increase protections for the LGBT community against discrimination of sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yeah, it's this is great news
mm-hmm.
because obviously this presidency has been all about tearing down this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is there's a turtle above them that will not see this bill.
Oh, he'll see it, but he won't let it see the light of day.
Yeah, and they also highlight in this article the bullshit that is being thrown at this bill. Conservatives argue the bill threatens freedom of speech. No, it doesn't. Religion and women's rights. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
You guys completely have all of your rights still.
Yeah.
Nothing changes because you're, you know, cis women, men, all that, you've always had the power.
Mm-hmm.
These are people getting better protection so you can't be assholes. Mm. Like we said before, like, this is just against these people being assholes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, allowing them to be normal people. Surprise, surprise, they want to be normal people like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a heated floor debate before the vote, Republicans pointed to a provision in the bill that says an individual could not be denied access to a restroom, locker room, or dressing room based on their gender identity. You can probably see where this goes. Opponents say that would force women and girls to share private spaces with men.
No, it doesn't. No, it fucking doesn't.
That doesn't fucking happen. critics also say the bill could facilitate men participating in women's sports if they identify as female. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
They have specific rules in, like, the Olympics and all that. There's the whole, what, Caster Minaya thing that's going on,
mm-hmm.
that's where she has higher testosterone than women normally do, so which means she's better than them when it runs, and so they're trying to legislate her out of it. And it's like, look at Michael Phelps. He is a genetic freak that was built for swimming. They didn't legislate him out of it, despite him winning.
No. No, they said, hey, you don't make as much lactic acid? Good for you, dude. That's awesome. You're white. You're male.
Yeah, we can have you sell Call of Duty and all this other shit. Like, we'll make money off of you. This woman comes along, which Nike had a great ad. It's like, you know, just be faster. Mm. You know, just fuck all those assholes. Just be better. That sort of thing that was to it. And it's like, it's more quotes here. Like, what if a Catholic church who accepts school lunch programs? What if a Jewish synagogue who accepts money from Homeland Security? Do they then have to violate their own faith beliefs? It's like, if your faith somehow extends to the bathroom as far as, like, who is allowed to use the bathroom of the gender identity they have, your religion is fucked up. That's fucked up. Like, let people fucking shit or piss how they want, because it's awful experience either way. Don't fucking make people do awful shit like, you know, people identify as a man and have to go into the women's room.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're an asshole that can't just say whatever, move on, because it's not your business.
All right,
fuck those again.
Yeah.
God, they're the worst people. It's just like, it's none of this shit has anything to do with you.
Yeah. No,
it's not your business. Move on.
Yeah,
stop trying to make it your fucking business because you're an asshole.
Mm-hmm. But anyway. Speaking of LGBT issues, the Trump administration, this is our first story for the Proper Show Proper. Trump administration wants to strip U.S. citizenship from kids of LGBT parents who were born abroad or surrogated abroad.
God, fuck these people.
And I have to wonder, if they strip citizenship from an LGBT child who was adopted abroad, mm-hmm. how are they not going to strip citizenship from an international adoption for a hetero couple?
Oh, they'll probably would like to find a way, I'm sure.
Mm. Well, yeah. Because what if they came from a brown country? Holy crap, that's horrible. Yeah. Like, we could retitle almost the entire Let's Weekend political part of the podcast from the time we started to whenever we stop as the last gasp of air from the wasps.
So this asshole wants to do this thing that's just an asshole thing.
Yeah.
It's that bit in Spaceballs, I'm surrounded by assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all those assholes were related, so.
Never mind. Why they're cross-eyed and well there.
I cannot wait until the baby boomers are dead.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that happened, and then Chris Evans decided, you know what? Fuck you people.
Yep.
Hey, good on him.
Yep. He called him out.
Yep. Yeah, Captain America went ahead and did what he does.
Well, I wish he would do it more literally.
Right. Well, they haven't developed a vibranium shield yet to throw at Trump, so yeah.
No. But yay Chris Evans and fuck you, Donald Trump.
Mm. Yeah, which this
You've only got 1 year left of your presidency, and I hope it's the fucking last.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of related to the Georgia abortion bill, because Georgia's a hotbed for, you know, film and TV studios to work in.
Yes, it is.
And they're very much a lot more anymore. Threatening, hey, you know what? Let's take our business elsewhere if you guys keep pushing this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which would be nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a state that is where, you know, Turner is headquartered.
Mm-hmm.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, hey, you know, there's lots of companies that are headquartered in Atlanta that would do well to maybe throw their muscle around.
Yeah. Like Coca-Cola, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't Delta down there?
Yep.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, like, hey, how about all the major sporting leagues?
Mm-hmm.
MLB, NBA, NFL, NHL. Is NHL still in Atlanta?
No.
They moved? Okay. But yeah, like, hey, throw your weight around like you did with the North Carolina bathroom bill a few years ago.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway. All right, so moving on from that. And other news about how fragile our system is. The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, revealed this week that Russia had actually managed to hack the voting databases of two counties in the state of Florida, but did nothing.
Uh-huh.
I don't sure believe that at all.
Hey, Phil, how many hackers just hack into government databases and then do nothing? Especially those of a foreign government that is hostile to us.
I would say none.
Okay.
Zero sounds like the safe number there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the you're saying that they weren't just curious kids that just happened to hack into two county databases for nothing other than just shits and giggles.
I don't think that was the case in this particular instance, no.
They didn't just leave a .txt file in there that says, gotcha.
Nah.
Well, they might have done that, too.
Yeah. Or they might have, you know, altered voting records because those machines don't have paper trails and they wouldn't have been able to tell anyway. So,
yeah. And Florida's one of the key states for generally every election.
Yeah.
The governor signed an agreement with the FBI not to reveal which counties these were. We could probably guess Broward County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it shits itself every single national election.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't have problems trying to do their recounts at all.
Not at all.
All right. Next story. More Trump shit. This week, Trump gave an official presidential pardon to Conrad Black. Now, you're wondering, okay, who's Conrad Black? He's a Canadian-born British former newspaper publisher and author. Way back in 2007, the year before Obama was elected, he was convicted on 4 counts of fraud in the U.S. District Court in Chicago. Now, 2 of those were dropped on appeal. However, he still got a conviction for felony fraud and obstruction of justice, and he was sentenced to 42 months in prison. Last year, he wrote a book specifically heaping a bunch of praise on Donald Trump.
Gee, I wonder how this affected things.
Yeah.
I think Trump specifically said, like, I'm not going to forget about this. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's expecting a you're welcome.
Yeah. For the record, remember, in order to get an official pardon, you have to admit to the crime that you committed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he really can't sort of – you get it.
Mm-hmm. Can't really dance around that one.
Yeah, and this just seems like cronyism, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This guy, you know, said some nice things about him, and now he gets this stricken from his record after, you know, admitting to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just it's one of those things that, you know, people – like, nobody's really talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because nobody really knows who the hell Conrad Black is. Phil might know more about him.
No.
Because he
was born in Canada, but most of the stuff he did was in England. Mm. So.
Yeah, well, let's see, it says Black and longtime business partner David Rattler turned investment in an English language daily in Quebec into a company that ran more than 300 newspapers.
Mm.
So there is. He's definitely not one of Canada's best sons.
Nope. No, he is not. But, yeah, just awful people doing favors for other awful people.
Yeah.
And this is, like, one of the least egregious ones.
All right, so, next story. So you may have heard this week that the Trump administration is ramping up their trade war with China.
Yeah, like there's supposed to be a proposed 25% tariff on board games.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's going to go over real great.
And so the Chinese fired back and said, okay, well, we're going to one-up you and do a bigger tariff on other stuff. And basically what's happening is it's basically killing the entire farming center of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Most of whom, by the way, also voted for him.
Like idiots.
But,
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Yeah. But the thing is, these guys are kind of a major part of America's food supply, so unfortunately we have to...
Yeah, they're getting
Yeah, exactly,
there.
Kitty. We have to help them out a bit every so often.
We want our
farmers. And now what's happening is the farmers are actually making noise. It's like, look, man, this shit is cutting into our business. We're set to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars this year. Some of us, apparently there are reports that a not insignificant number of farmers in despair have actually killed themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very hard industry.
Mm-hmm. And, keep in mind, we're not talking about agribusiness either. We're talking about family farms here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so Senator Tom Cotton, being the giant asshole that he is, said that, although he appreciates the sacrifice that the farmers are making, he thinks their sacrifice are minimal to the men and women in uniform who die for our freedoms every day. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows that, too. It's just – it's rhetorical shit that the GOP does. Because they, like, think – they'll you say something, they'll say, soldiers! And they're like, and you're supposed to, like, bow your head. And
It's like, there are plenty of asshole soldiers.
Yeah.
Trying to play the hardship.
At least
Olympics.
One of them's in my family.
Yeah, it's again, this is the GOP just being incredibly disingenuous.
Yeah. They're trying all of their old tricks. You know,
because their positions don't stand up on their own merits.
Yeah, are you noticing how we're starting to ramp up the rhetoric on Iran?
Mm-hmm.
And are you noticing how it has all the hallmarks of the shit that got us into Iraq?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even the same rhetorical shit.
Yeah.
Almost like we're living in year 12 of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just stupid shit from a stupid person.
Yeah. Stupid people. Stupid fucking people.
Yeah. Somehow you got elected, and that's everybody's loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of stupid fucking people, Senator Ted Cruz, who I will remind people, barely managed to scrape by last election.
Against a guy who's probably not going to get anywhere close to a presidential nomination.
Yeah. Senator Ted Cruz has decided that he is putting his support behind Donald Trump's Space Force bullshit because he's scared of space pirates.
Yeah, so here's the whole quote. Since the ancient Greeks first put to sea, nations have recognized the necessity of naval forces maintaining superior capability to protect waterborne travel and commerce from bad actors. Pirates threaten the open seas, and the same is possible in space. In the same way, I believe we too must now recognize the necessity of a space force to defend the nation and to protect space commerce and civil space exploration.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not anywhere close to fucking space pirates, dude. This isn't Metroid.
What animated somebody show him that got him shook?
Oh my god.
Better yet, what kind of contract kickback is he going to make money off of?
It's true.
It's something, because I wish I would have heard what Daniel Suarez had to say about this.
Yeah.
He would have lost his shit to hear this.
Yeah, this is in the case of unnecessary tax spends. This Space Force is it would cost about more than $2 billion to get off the ground. And up to about 7,800 new personnel for overhead management. That's just overhead management. That's another $1 billion to the Pentagon's costs. And it's like, we don't fucking need to be spending this fucking money on this bullshit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's something to keep in mind when we're actually going into fucking space, but we're not. We're sending a couple people up to the ISS every once in a while.
Yeah. Right.
And those people are coming back physically
exhausted.
Diminished.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because space takes a lot out of you if it doesn't kill you first.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you have to be specifically trained for that.
And you have to have a certain biology as well. Because space is not humans not built to live in space. We've had to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's gonna be a while before Mass Effect kicks in.
Yeah. Got to figure out spin gravity first, and then
And the warp drive, which may never happen.
Mm.
But
yeah.
Anyway, now more stupid people doing stupid shit. The White House this week released a tool for people to report so-called biased bans from social media.
Yeah.
So I basically went and put in the addresses for Breitbart and the Daily Wire and Barbed Wire and all of the White Ring scam shit sites that I've been kicked off of.
Fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're biased against you.
Yeah.
Your right to free speech on their platforms.
Yeah. I have to ask, though, they've done this shit before with other other fucking subjects, and they always go wrong because they always underestimate the will of the internet to fuck shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, how stupid are they? I just answered my own goddamn question.
Yeah.
Hey, you're asking a question for which the answer you already know.
Like, right now, I know that in the Trump administration, there is a department, the U.S. Digital Services,
mm-hmm.
who are helmed by incredibly smart, incredibly talented people. Former Googler Matt Cutts is there. These guys know their shit.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are not behind this.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they're geniuses with stupid bosses.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, if anybody had asked them if this was a good idea, they would have said no. This is a terrible idea.
You have no idea what you're about to unleash upon yourself.
Yeah, so the trolling will begin immediately.
Yeah. I do love this part of the article. Trump himself has accused technology companies of bias against him. And everybody tweeted that Twitter is very discriminatory and does not treat me well as a Republican. Later in the day, during an Oval Office meeting with Twitter chief executive Jack Dorsey, Trump even raised the issue of the size of his Twitter following.
Because that's all he cares about.
It's like, I got a lot of people following me. You can't be discriminating against me. It's like, they don't discriminate against you in any way.
Yeah.
They just ban assholes that you like.
Yeah,
Twitter is actually has even looser standards than Facebook does.
Yeah.
At least so far.
And it's this is just people crying because they don't understand what private companies are on the internet.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, hey, you know, go to Breitbart's, you know, espouse some actual good things on their comments if they have them. when you get banned, just cry out, no, you're, you know,
censoring me.
Censoring my right to free speech. Yeah. They'll
and
tell you.
Well, without fail, get the response. It's a private space. They can do whatever they want.
Oh, wait. Oh, hey.
You know, how many of these assholes do you think are free market capitalists?
Yeah, I was fixing to say, if that's your issue here, your issue isn't with free speech, brother. It's with capitalism. And now you're speaking my language.
Yeah.
Prepare yourselves. I have some literature for you to read.
And some memes.
And I may have to do a puppet show. But anyway, next up, Bill Nye, science guy. We all love Bill Nye, right?
Of course.
So he recently did a thing on John Oliver's Last Week Tonight where they talked about climate change.
Yeah, especially in the context of carbon pricing as a thing to help combat it.
Yeah. And Bill Nye basically showed that he isn't taking any more shit.
Yeah. I don't think they have the video here, but he's basically they did a couple bits with him, especially kind of playing off of the I'm an easily amused adult that just needs you to do, you know, silly experiments to entertain me on important topics kind of thing. We said by the end of the century, if temperatures keep rising, the average temperature of Earth could go up another 4 to 8 degrees. Let's see, what I'm saying is the planet's on fucking fire. And he showed that by just setting a
globe on fire with a blowtorch.
Yeah, I didn't mind explaining photosynthesis to you when you were 12, but you're adults now. This is an actual crisis. Got it?
Safety glasses off, motherfuckers.
Yes.
I like hulked up Bill Nye.
Yeah.
This is kind of some of the stuff he does on his Netflix show. With less cursing, but with some of the same enthusiasm. For telling people, like, you know, stop being fucking entertained by me and actually start asking.
Listening to what I'm saying, goddammit.
Yeah. And asking the people, you know, running your governments to stop being fucking morons, which stop electing people that are fucking morons.
Yeah.
John Oliver did a bit on, it was after the Paris Agreement stuff that Trump did where he pulled us out. And like showing that some of your local representatives think, you know, like it's the height of hubris of man to think that we have any effect on the climate on this earth. Compared to what God can do. It's like, well,
here we go again,
fuck.
Back to the theocracy.
And it's like, no, fuck you. This is not a religious thing. This is science.
Yeah.
And the Republicans are the party of anti-science because it conflicts with whatever beliefs they want to have.
Because their paychecks depend on it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you want your paychecks to keep coming from whatever job you have? Probably should be working hard to get climate change, the damage from that, to be as minimal as possible.
Yeah.
And we still have a long way to go for that shit.
Yeah.
We've only got 10 years before things get real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's already pretty bad now.
All right. Next story, another science story. Study has shown definitively that the moon does have moonquakes.
Yeah, so here's the thing you might not know is the moon is shrinking.
Yeah.
Its interior is cooling. It's getting about 100. It's gotten about 150 feet skinnier over the last several hundred million years, which isn't much in the grand scheme, but it's still significant. And they liken it here to, as you've probably seen, like a grape wrinkles as it shrinks down to a raisin.
Yeah.
The moon sort of does that, but it's not. Its crust is not flexible. So that's where your moonquakes come from.
Yeah. This is terrifying to me because this is like also the beginning of Neal Stephenson's Seven Eves, where the moon starts shrinking and eventually like basically splits. And then the Kessler effect kicks in. And yeah. This is not cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All indications are that it's not coming to that, though.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. All right, and next up. Some of you guys may remember last fall we had the big campfire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very big. It did a wide swath of damage.
Yeah. It was the deadliest wildfire in California history.
Yeah. Well, the California fire inspectors, they finally revealed, they found the source of the fire, and they found out who caused it. It was literally Pacific Gas and Electric.
Yeah. Yeah. There were suspicions that this was the case.
Yeah, it was by electrical transmission lines owned and operated by PG&E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Pulga area of Butte County.
Mm-hmm.
The fire had two ignition sites. According to investigators, the second fire in a different part of the county was consumed by the initial blaze that started near Pulga. Yeah.
Maintain well, somebody's about to go fucking bankrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have no...
They already filed for Chapter 11 last year, I believe.
Oh,
shortly on the heels of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they were like, yeah, well, we're officially fucked.
Yeah. Which means just, hey, taxpayers, you're going to be paying for it.
Yeah.
Your price is going to go up because you're going to have to help pay for this.
And the PG&E people, they get their golden parachutes and they get off scot fucking free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every time fucking
every goddamn time.
Capitalism. Yay.
Unless, of course, the state of California actually decides to, I don't know, get some balls and go after them.
Hold their feet to the fire.
Which
as associates to criminal whatever.
Yeah, which isn't out of the question.
Yeah. So, yeah. Goddamn. Mm-hmm. All right, next up. San Francisco has officially banned the use of facial recognition software by both police and other city departments.
Thank you.
This is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that this won't be the first, that it'll spread out.
Yeah, it's like we barely trust cops with guns.
Yeah,
much less with actual technology. Like they still have trouble accepting reports of abuse online and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
we don't need them to be dealing with super powerful recognition software.
Mm-hmm.
Which in a lot of cases, the recognition software is actually pretty dumb. It's trained on a data set, and the recognition is only as good as that data set. And if your data set consists of mostly white guys, it's going to be pretty damn good at recognizing white guys.
I fucking guarantee you that the cops, the facial recognition that are going to be marketed towards cops, will not be focusing on white guys.
Yeah.
White women, maybe.
Yeah. But, yeah, so this is a good thing for everybody involved. All
right. Next up, tech story. Lenovo has revealed the world's first foldable Windows PC.
Yeah. So we're still chasing that one down, huh?
Oh, this is going to happen. This actually looks really cool.
I don't know. I mean,
if they can do it without breaking the screen.
Well, that's the thing. There's probably been one that's folded in the past.
Yeah,
but not successfully.
Successfully.
This PC is foldable once.
Yeah.
Right?
But yeah, this is kind of just a laptop taking it to its extreme.
Yeah.
Just having the whole screen be what you're looking at.
It's basically a smart pad, but you can fold it in half so that the bottom is the keyboard and the upper half is the screen, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Given that this is Lenovo, I think this will actually come out.
You can spend specs for money. It. Yeah, 13.3 inch OLED. 4:3 aspect ratio.
Okay. Oh, great. We're back to 4:3.
Yeah.
Well, for tablet type purposes, I could see them doing it, but it's going to be a bear for watching movies.
Yeah, it's going to be great for retro gaming.
Yeah, right.
It's got a Wacom pen in it, two USB Type-C ports, stereo speakers, 4G support. Less than 2 pounds.
Solid.
Yeah. 2K resolution too.
Mm. 4K. All right. Yeah. Sounds awesome.
Does it have enough RAM to handle Chrome?
No, nothing in the known universe has enough RAM to handle
Chrome.
I'm right there.
Chrome will use whatever RAM you have plus 2 gigabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're saying the Goku, it's the Goku of browsers.
Yeah. All right. Now for the entertainment portion of the show.
Yeah.
First story. In season 22 of the popular children's television show Arthur. You guys all remember Arthur, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you guys know Mr. Ratburn, who is Arthur's teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. It finally was pretty much shown for everybody who, you know, wasn't paying attention that, yes, Mr. Ratburn is in fact gay, and he got married this season.
Aww.
But here's the thing. Here's the fun part.
I wasn't paying attention, and I could tell.
Yeah. Here's right. The fun part, though. They didn't actually center the entire story around the fact that he was gay and getting married.
Oh,
What they did was he announces he's getting married, and then the kids, they meet this woman who they think Mr. Ratburn's going to be marrying, and also turns out to be actually Mr. Ratburn's sister, and also has to be clearly gay herself, because if you've seen the screenshots, her with her stylish tuxedo and short hair, she screams Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, they get to the wedding and they find out that no, she is not the bride. She is, in fact, his sister. And it's like, okay, then who is he marrying? And then he walks down the aisle hand in hand with this aardvark fellow. And then it finally is like, oh, okay. Like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, there was a joke in there about how, you know, is everyone's moms here? And there's like, yeah, I think everyone, he looks out in the crowd and he's like, wow, that's a lot of moms. And it was completely sweet and innocent, and of course the internet had to go and do what the internet does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and complain and ruin my childhood.
Yeah.
I got
again,
those people.
Counting down the days when all of the baby boomers finally die.
Yeah.
It's not just the baby boomers, dudes.
I need to address this. This thing has ruined my childhood thing, because it's been pissing me off for a little while now.
Yeah.
Your childhood cannot be ruined because it already happened.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Unless you find out, like, you know, your parents or some friend did something horrible.
Or, you know, Mr. Rogers was a pedophile or something. He wasn't.
No, but
yeah.
Or that story about how, you know, why, you know, Ducky's voice actress didn't return for the second movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the movies and such you loved as a kid, they still exist.
Yeah.
You might actually still like them or whatever, but like the new Ghostbusters doesn't change how good the other two are.
No. Right.
They don't disappear from.
Besides, the second
forever.
Movie wasn't even that good, and the first one was basically a flash in the pan.
Yeah. So.
Like, stop treating everything as super precious and can never change or get new things.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of movies, you know what movie I have found is almost impossible to find now?
Hmm.
What's that?
Like, so impossible. Like, it's on no streaming networks. There's very few, like Blu-ray or DVD releases that don't go along in, like, some kind of, like, compilation DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Because that movie is not very
well at all.
Yeah, there are plenty of those sort of movies that do not age well.
Yeah.
See, Porky's is, you know, it's got its problematic moments, but it's still considered, I guess for lack of a better word, for classic, because it still has that timeless bit of it that, you know, it's still funny. Revenge on the Nerds, however, that world doesn't exist anymore.
No.
No. Everybody's a nerd now.
Yeah. And it also kind of shows the parts of the nerd culture that we unfortunately have had to learn are not exactly positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. But anyway. Okay, next story. There's going to be a new Batman movie coming, and currently Robert Pattinson is rumored to be in it. He's currently in talks to star in it.
Yeah.
Diggory.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see.
yeah, maybe he can finally, you know, break Twilight from his...
Something's got to wash it off.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He hates it.
Yeah, he hates that whole franchise. He admits the only reason he did it was for the paycheck.
Yeah. It was probably a hell of a paycheck.
Yeah it was. Yeah. The good thing, though, is, you know, if you've seen any of the stuff he's been in the last few years, it shows that he's actually a pretty competent actor. So,
well, he was very good in the Harry Potter movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a history of, you know, unexpected actors being given these, like, key roles in Batman movies. And, you know, surprising everybody that mm-hmm. thinks it's going to be shit, because nobody thought Heath Ledger would be a good Joker, and he nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he not only nailed it, he defined the character in such a way that it is considered up there along with the traditional characterization of it.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Yeah. And, yeah, so we'll see how that works.
And this is the movie that's helmed by... Matt Reeves, who did the most recent Planet of the Apes movies, which are all pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
So certainly a good director to have in charge of stuff. But this has been in the works for a long time.
Yep.
They've been trying to figure out how to do it, I guess,
in
relation to the other DC Universe stuff. Mm-hmm. They said, eh, fuck it, we're just going to do it.
Yep.
DC lately has been kind of on an upswing, so I'm kind of happy to see where this is going to go.
Yeah. All right, next up we got a couple of Netflix stories. First, Netflix released the trailer for season 5 of Black Mirror. It's coming out June 5th.
Yeah.
So seems like it's just going to be 3 episodes. Or at least they say 3 new stories.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Is they're just going to focus on these more, like, less stories, but more, you know, more in them. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah. I like Black Mirror. It's such a reflection of the times that we live in right now. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And other Netflix story we got, they released a trailer for a new Asian rom-com called Always Be My Maybe, because they want that that Crazy Rich Asians money.
Mm. And they got some good actors in this. Ali Wong is the female lead.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Randall Park and Daniel Day Kim's in it, and a couple of others. We watch the trailer, you see another interesting actor as one of the potential love interests, and it's a pretty good choice. Somebody maybe has a movie that comes out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
John Wick. Yeah.
John Wick. Three. The third John Wick movie.
Yep.
Yeah, I need to watch the second one and then go see that sometime this weekend.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one's clearly not for me. So I'll just put that out there.
This one seems fun.
And, finally, last story of the night, we finally got our first full-length trailer for HBO's adaptation of the His Dark Materials trilogy by Philip Pullman, a.k.a. the Anti-Narnia. Yeah.
I have two words.
Yeah.
Fuck yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think HBO is going to need something after the whole Game of Thrones glow wears mm-hmm. off. This might be going in that direction.
Yeah.
I do see a Game of Thrones actor in this.
Yeah, well, they got time now.
Yeah. I forgot that I'm pretty sure got killed off a while ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that as like a spoiler or anything. He has not been on it for quite a while.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that's I think we got a show for tonight.
Oh my god.
Wow, do we? Boy, I do not envy you, Phil.
It was a hell of a show though.
Yeah. Hell of a week.
Yeah. Anyway, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any place that is a podcast aggregator or just some place where you can download casts like ours and enjoy them with your ear mouths. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brian Perkins, and for Filippo Dinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, and Teresa Samet, saying good night, sleep tight, the fight fucking begins now.